You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Watford and England legend, Luther Blissett. Let's start with Man United, because that's obviously a massive story this morning. The fact that they are, well, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer ordered his players, he didn't want to see them.
That's
after
right, yeah.
After that result of the weekend. And all I'm reading and all I'm hearing is that it's very poisonous down there.
It does. You do get this feeling from things you hear. And we all have our sources and people that know they profess to know what's going on within the club and whatever.
What have you heard?
And they come out that, you know, there's been a lot of friction between the players, and, you know, you hear things between the British players and the foreign players, you know. So they said there's been a bit of disquiet. Yeah, a bit of disquiet.
Right. And because no one essentially is pulling their weight there. I mean, Alan Shearer did the analysis on Match of the Day on Saturday night, and he said that second goal at Cardiff, when the Cardiff midfielder ran off Paul Pogba and Pogba just let him go and was about 20 metres behind him at the end of it, and the guy just squared it.
They'd all given up. It was all over for them. After that start they had, you know, to have that record-breaking run and then for it to go so badly wrong, what is it, 8 defeats out of the final... whatever it was.
12 games, eight defeats, 2 draws, 2 wins.
Terrible.
And those 2 wins, by the way, were against Watford, which they shouldn't have won, and West Ham, which they shouldn't have won as well.
That's right, yeah.
You know, so they could have not won a game in 12 if it wasn't for those two.
Which would have been horrific if that were the case.
It's horrific anyway.
Yes.
It's horrific anyway. And now, of course, moving forward... what they have to do is give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, a man who's had 8 defeats out of the last 12... enormous amounts of money and say over transfers and all the rest of it, because he is the manager.
Yes.
And they have to trust him. But 6 games into next season, if things aren't going well, are they going to sack him? Should they sack him now?
Well, put it this way. United are at fault, I think, in the first place. They should never, ever have given it, because it all really seemed to just blow up after they gave him the job. The players decided, right, we can relax now, because they obviously think we're fine and things have gone off the boil. They should not have done it. There was no need. They should not have succumbed to media and everybody saying, give him the job. They should have stuck to their guns, and if they were going to do it, they'd have done it at the end of the season. Would they have given the job now, after these defeats and after these performances?
No doubt they wouldn't have.
They would have brought somebody else in. So United are culpable for jumping the gun on that one. And they put themselves and Solskjaer in a very dodgy position at this moment in time,
because
confidence can't be there now going into the summer with the players they're going to buy. But the saving grace with all of this
is there a saving grace?
There's always, and there has to be one. Otherwise, you know, we might as well give up. The saving grace for me is if they do decide they sack him, if things don't go well after a certain number of names, it depends on who they bring in and the players they're bringing in. Yes, he's got to have a big say in who those are. But also, they are talking about
Darren Fletcher
being the technical director.
And you know what? Fine, if Darren Fletcher has the qualifications for the job.
Yeah.
It strikes me that most of the technical directors they're talking about ex-players. They're talking about people with United connections. And I think but. It's not really about connections at the club, is it? Isn't it more about connections elsewhere?
It's about having connections elsewhere. You would hope that in the time that these players have been playing and towards the end of their careers, they would have... You know, I think they can. The thing is, players can open doors because of the status they had when they were playing. People will talk to them, and then you say it's Manchester United as well. They will listen, and you know that conversation can be had about players.
Sure. What I heard when I was because somebody was talking about the Arsenal looking for a technical director as well, and they possibly were going to use Edu, the ex-midfielder.
That's right. Yeah.
And Edu has a very close relationship with Kia Jurabjian, who is one of these super agent guys.
Yeah.
Now that to me strikes me if it's a little bit. You know, that it leaves out players who are represented by someone else. But it strikes me that is quite a key thing of the job, because the agent is the one who has the connection to all the players.
They have. But the thing is about agents are, they will pretty much, they don't particularly care where they sell players to in the main.
No.
Right? They don't care because what they want is to get the deal done. And whoever will do the deal, they'll deal with them. So that isn't a problem. So, I mean, for if he does get the job, he will already have, and the club will already have, contacts with all these people anyway. And it's just a case of building a bit of a relationship with them so that they will be maybe a little more honest with you than they are with the next one.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of clear-sighted thinking at Manchester United. If you think about the way Man City are running, we'll get on to Man City, and obviously there are the financial fair play implications. Yes. And they're massive, right?
They're huge.
If they can't get in the Champions League...
If they can't play Champions League next year, goodness me.
We'll talk about that, right? We'll talk about that. But they have three people who run that club, right? They have Ferran Soriano, Tixi Begiristan and Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
And those three between them do a lot of the strategy. They do a lot of who do we buy, how do we approach them, how much money we got to spend, all of that stuff. And God knows what else that we don't even know about.
Yeah, well, we all know what Pep is. He's very much, what's the word? He is one of the most committed people I've ever...
Unbelievably
committed.
You believe
the things that he does.
Unbelievably committed. And I'll tell you a little story before we break. But what I'm saying is that those three work together in Barcelona. Yeah. They know how each other works. Yeah. They have a long history.
They've got a good network.
And they've got an excellent network, no doubt. And they've got all the money they could possibly want.
Yeah.
And they and you can see the rewards. But this, by the way, this has been in the planning for 10 years, this stuff. I'm sure Man City were thinking about this. I mean, I remember Ferguson talking about City in 2008. So this is 11 years ago.
Yeah.
United are possibly 10 or 11 years behind Man City in terms of where they want to be.
They are with that infrastructure behind the recruitment and that of scouting players. No doubt about it, they are.
Miles.
I mean, once upon a time, United have been one of those clubs that people would come to them. I think that is the problem with United. People would come to them. We have got this player and we want him to come to Manchester United. The player wants to come to Manchester United. But now they've got such rivalry from other clubs in this country as well as the big ones abroad. So times are tougher for them and they now need to get their house in order, and they need to get this structure behind it that it's integrated, and regardless of who the head coach is, it works because they just come in and they slot into what Manchester United are doing. And, you know, all the coach does is add their little bit to whatever's already going on.
And not only do players not want to come to Man United, players want to leave as well. Herrera's off. De Gea has not signed his new contract. Yeah. The whole idea of Solskjaer coming along was that he steadied the ship and then these players signed it. He hasn't signed. One thing, by the way, because we're going to talk about Man City in a minute. I was sitting with my missus last night. We were having dinner and she's telling me about this thing she saw about Pep Guardiola. Somebody wanted a selfie with him, right? It was after the Man City game on Sunday. Everyone is excited. He's doing loads of media interviews. This guy comes up and he goes, "Can I have a selfie, Pep?" And you could see Pep was not very keen, but he went, "All right, you know what? You're the fan." And the guy, he had him ready, and the guy said, "Let me just sort my phone out." And Pep went, "I'm not giving you a selfie, right?" He said, "If you're doing a selfie with me, you have your phone ready.
Ready. Yes.
Ready. Yeah. I am busy, and I'm going back to my interviews." And he went back, leaving the guy alone. But that is the level of focus desire.
That is how it should be. I mean, you know, not to that level, but you get the same. You know, you're doing your business. People say, "Can I have a selfie?" And like, I go, "Oh, I've just got to get my phone." "What do you mean you've just got to get your phone?"
"Well, then..."
It's like, sorry, the moment is gone.
The moment has
gone.
Because
then you've got other things to do. Yeah.
It was an example of the way the guy lives his life.
Yes.
And what you don't have in terms of that focus is something that doesn't appear to be at Manchester United at all.
No.
At the moment. Love Sport. Sky Sports were just showing a little montage there of Mike Dean doing his Mike Dean thing, just being completely over theatrical. "Look at me. Look at me. I'm Mike Dean. I'm the most flamboyant of the referees." It's ridiculous, really. I don't need it. And I don't buy into this as well because, listen, my team has been on the end of some pretty poor Mike Dean decisions.
Well, it is. All you ever want from the... When are the days... You think back before the Premier League and all this hype about what referees are doing, that sort of thing. When you went through a game and you think to yourself, who was the referee today?
That Exactly. The Victorians with children, seen but not heard. That's what we want with referees.
Yes. Do your job, but keep quiet.
Keep quiet. At the end of it, exactly what you want. Who was the referee today? He was really good. I didn't even notice him.
Yes.
That's what we want, which is not something you would ever say about Mike Dean. Now, with the third, I wonder if it happens in cricket as well. We'll ask.
Remember Dickie Bird?
Dickie Bird, of course. Yeah, well, we'll talk about this. With a third of five one-day internationals between England and Pakistan taking place this afternoon in Bristol. There is still plenty to learn before Ashley Giles announces the final World Cup squad on the 22nd of May. Joining us now is the cricket writer David Charlesworth of the Press Association. Morning, David.
Morning, chaps. How are you doing?
Yeah, all right. Now, Adil Rashid and Jofra Archer didn't train before this game. Chance for others to make a claim, do you think?
Well, it certainly is, yeah. I mean, England are looking to test their 15-man squad ahead of the World Cup. The chances are, with so many fixtures during the World Cup, England will have to rest and rotate some players during that. The fact that resting Jofra Archer is quite interesting for a second game in a row, that kind of suggests that he's already in. Obviously, Adil Rashid is a dead cert, really. But resting him gives Joe Denley a chance to make a case for his final selection, 15. I think Ed Smith, the national selector, is a big fan of Joe. But he hasn't really played that many one-day games. So this is obviously a chance to really cement his place as the utility man that he is, like, you know, that spare batsman,
or that
third spinner. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on today.
I mean, the thing about Jofra Archer, I was surprised he didn't play the other day, because I know that pitch wouldn't have suited him as much, and it would have been interesting to see him toil away a little bit more, just to see what he could get out of something that wasn't helping him.
Yeah, his reputation has gone stratospheric, really, hasn't it? After
a couple of overs in a washed out first game.
Yeah, I was at that game actually. I mean, the difference in pace. I was actually sat side on with the difference in pace between him and the rest. I mean, you know, Walks and Plunkett are no trudges, but the difference in pace between Archer, Plunkett, and Walks was staggering. It really, really was. He was giving batsmen the hurry. I mean, you saw what Fakazaman did the other day. He couldn't lay a bat on Jofra Archer at the Oval last Wednesday. Maybe England have taken the view that, you know, we'll wrap him up.
So, we'll keep him
as sort of a secret weapon and keep him in cotton wool until the World Cup starts. I can't blame them, I suppose. But then again, looking at it from the other side, playing a bit devil's advocate, he maybe needs... Does he need more over? Does he need to play more one-day matches? I suppose the proof will be in the pudding. Come in the next few weeks or so.
Yeah, I mean, I think what they'll probably do is play him, you know, later on in it again, give him one or two more games later on. Because, I mean, I remember when I was at school, we played this team in London from another school, and their fast bowlers were ridiculous, because we faced bowlers before. I never saw the first two deliveries. It was just ridiculous. I thought, this game is far too dangerous. I'm going to play football instead.
Yeah, but you know, but everyone knows about Jofra Archer, though, don't they? Even now. I mean, it's only, you know what? People sit up and take notice when people are bowling at 93 miles an hour.
Yeah, but you may know about it, but until you actually witness it and actually face one of these things, that's when it really comes home to you.
David, England are favourites at the World Cup, are they not?
They are, certainly. It's the way they closed out the game there. I mean, granted, you know, conceding 350 is never good.
No, but David, you know, Willey at the end, that
really held the nerve. David Willey in his last two overs. Even Chris Wokes in his last over. You know, I mean, granted he had 19 to defend, but, you know, the way they closed the game out, starting to, in high-pressure scenarios, I mean, you think back to the West Indies game in the Caribbean when, you know, granted, again, they were defending about 400, but when it was all going crash-bang-wallop, Owen Morgan held his own, trusted his bowlers to get them over the line, which is what they're doing. And I think that's one of the reasons why they are one of the favourites for the World Cup. And-